Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the 8.5th annual Fall Spectacular. This is because every fall we do a fall show. But last year we got mixed up in our counting and we couldn't figure out if it was number 7 or 8. So we did the 7.5th annual
show. So we didn't know if it was 6 or 8.
Yeah,
or
something like
in between.
It could be the 8th and a quarter for all we know.
We've done a bunch of them.
We have done several fall spectaculars and this is yet another one. With us from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, the Director of Rehab Services, Dr. Melanie Ledford. Hi, Melanie.
Hello, Tony.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and here from the University of Kentucky to explain about our electronic presence and to make his presence known is Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. They're there. They're on that new webpage. Yes, it does look a little different. But you know what? It's real nice. Take a look at it. Look at some of the other WMKY shows. Then find your way over to the Health Matters portion. Listen to some of the shows. Sign up for the podcast. It's all about the audio at WMKY.org. Then jump on over to Facebook. Put a slash and an HM radio show at the end of your URL at the top of the page. And there you'll find a page devoted to Health Matters. You can leave us some comments. Leave us some show topics. Whatever you want there. You can read some of the stuff we post. I know Tony tries to post some of the research that comes on the show, some of the research that's coming through the news that doesn't make the show. There's all kinds of things out there on Facebook. So again, go to Facebook.com, do a search for HM Radio Show, and there you will find Health Matters.
Our sponsor bringing back a classic, Shoes with Tread. That's right, beware. Don't you dare make a slip, take a dip, or a trip. You can thump a bump upon your hip. And how do you avoid these slips, dips, and trips? You wear Shoes with Tread. Now, Melanie, I've got some of the characteristics of a good shoe here from a research paper back a few years ago. First of all, heel height, absolutely critical for shoes. They mention heel height and the width of the heel. If you decide you're going to balance your body on a heel that is a quarter of an inch in width or less and more than 2 or 3 inches high, you have quite a balancing act and quite a high likelihood of falling.
This is correct. So when I wear my 4-inch heels, I'm very cautious.
You are. Do you wear
You wide? Wear 4-inch heels?
I do occasionally.
Yeah, but she's good at this. She does this for a living. She knows the risks, and she's willing to take them. Do you go with the really narrow heels?
They're kind of medium. Not wide, not real narrow. Medium. They're not
See,
chunky.
She can't make up her mind.
Yeah.
No.
Have you ever got your shoes stuck in a grate?
I have gotten my shoe stuck in a grate and in a crack of the sidewalk. Yes. Walked out of the shoe. Yes.
Okay, so those are narrow heels.
Tony, have you?
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah, Tony,
you know,
have you?
My medical students were surprised to hear that I wore platform heels when I was in high school because that was the fashion for guys.
It was.
At that time. So I had them. They were, in fact, blue suede because...
You don't have to go any farther.
Blue suede.
It's okay.
Shoes
That's
and
right.
platform.
It's your show. Don't
they,
wow.
They went with the leisure suit. What can I say? I was a young man coming of age, and I knew I had to have the fashion in order to impress the women because certainly my ability to pronounce her name was not going to do it. So there it was. So heel height and heel width, a problem, obviously, if you go with high heels, especially as a person gets older, not as good at balance. High heel collars they talk about, that is ankle support from the shoes, turns out to be a good thing. Low shoes, less ankle support, higher risk of falling than the higher running type shoes. Turns out older men perform better with thin, hard-soled shoes rather than soft soles, maybe because there's more instability to soft soles. Do you notice that with your patients, Melanie? Is there a difference in the soles and their risk of falling?
I do notice a difference in the soles. Some elderly men do perform better with thin, hard-soled shoes. When they're really soft, like it said in this article, it is more unstable foot position, and they tend to have less stability when they walk. And also, if you get too thick, soft sole, they're not able to tell where their foot is in space, and they tend to trip on that. So I do notice a difference.
According to this article, no relationship between sole hardness and balance in 42 older women. Perhaps they are used to teetering on those heels.
4-inch heels, that's right.
And then finally, and this is why we brought up shoes with tread, the coefficient of friction on the walking surface may influence your risk of slipping. That is, those slick house shoes that you slip on easily can also slip off easily. We are not fond of thongs. We call them flip-flops or trip-flops, if you want to call them that. Rather, we think the shoe should fit well and should have some coefficient of friction so you don't slip on the floor.
do they address the non-skid socks in the hospital? You know, all the socks with the non-skid surface on the bottom?
If you've ever been in the hospital, you get these little socks, and they have these little dots of friction material mixed in with a sock. Does that do any good, do you think?
I think it does some good. The therapists are big about not going to the restroom in your bare feet and putting on your socks with the little skid protection on the bottom. But I'm not sure that they do a whole lot.
You know, but you remember, they used to have house shoes. They had flat plastic soles and stretchy tops, and you could get hospital house shoes many years ago, and then they went to the socks.
But don't you think that there are three options here, right? There's barefoot, there's a sock with no skid protection, and then there's the non-slip surface socks. So don't you think that what they're really trying to do is they're just trying to prevent you from option number two? I mean, your bare feet probably do actually have better traction than the sock with tread, but how many people get in the hospital and get cold and want to put socks on? And this, I know when I wear socks, you know, if you wear them on a wood floor or a slick floor like a hospital, well, they become treacherous.
And all hospitals will have tiled surfaces where you could run into
problems. They put the tread, they tried to put some traction on there just so you wouldn't, in the sock, you wouldn't be...
So you're going with the Teflon shoes. I like the idea, Rick.
Well, that's a roller skating rink.
Well, you are correct, Rick. That is the worst of all, are the socks with no tread. And people do like to wear their socks. Most have cold feet, so you're correct.
There's a certain age where you need to quit pretending you're in the movie Risky Business, right? Where you come sliding in on the socks.
I still do that, though, especially...
I bet you do.
Well, I mean, even with shoes on...
Tony, that's a visual.
If it's raining and you come into a building that has a tile floor, you got to... First of all, you got to be prepared for exactly how slick things are, so you slide a little just to see what happens. Sure. That's just basic building mechanics.
No, that's
there.
Just risky business.
That's our sponsor, Shoes with Ted. Remember, shoes with tread. Remember, don't make
Ted?
A slip.
Did he just call
don't
you
take
Ted?
A dip. Don't take a trip.
He did.
You can thump a bump upon your hip. That's our Halloween reminder for shoes with tread. So, Melanie, tell us what's going on.
Which one of us is Ted?
I don't have to do this radio show.
Oh, to the contrary.
Things go bad here. I just pack up and I leave.
I think our producer is looking at us thinking otherwise.
Melanie, what's going on at St. Clair Rehab?
St. Clair Rehab. Fifth floor has undergone a facelift, one thing. It's totally remodeled. New flooring, new paint, new tile in the nurse's station, new counters. So it's looking really nice up there. Not that that's what's going to have you have the most success rehab-wise, but it's always nice to be in a nice atmosphere when you're undergoing rehab. Nice sitting area for the family members with big screen TV and a little fake fireplace.
Since a fake fireplace?
Fake fireplace, yes.
That's
fake
really
fireplace
nice, with
in
fake
our wedding
smoke alarms and everything.
Fake smoke
right?
alarms and everything.
Now, your inpatient rehab, you will take people who've had strokes, people who've had hip and knee replacements, and also I know you were doing some rehab in people who just had been in the hospital a long time.
Yes.
And had gotten very weak.
Yes. You've named the majority of our patients right there. Strokes are a big part of it, hip and knee replacements, whether it be for arthritis or a fracture or a hip repair because of fracture. And many people who have become debilitated from long-term hospital stay up on our floor or if they need IV antibiotics. But many people, it does not take long of being in bed to weaken and lose muscle strength. And so many people who have been in the hospital for a week or more will come up to get strengthened before they go home.
And what's the usual length of stay in the inpatient rehab center there at St. Clair?
Average length for stroke, debility, about 2 weeks is average, but we have some people after joint replacements, they're out in about 3 days. They just really recover quickly. But average length of stay, about 2 weeks. And it's all patient dependent, but that's the average.
Now, I've just actually had a friend who was talking to me about her father who was going to get both knees replaced.
Right.
And she thought that was nuts, that how can you rehab both knees at the same time? Are you seeing a lot of that? And what's the advantages and disadvantages?
It is becoming much more common, surprisingly. We used to think it was kind of crazy to get both knees done at one time because both legs, of course, are in pain and you can't put more weight on the non-operative knee. But the good thing is you get it done at once, your recovery time is really not that much longer. I have a couple of patients right now that have had both knees done at the same time and they're doing very well. The surgical procedure, they got it down now. The recovery time's quicker. And the advantage, especially if you're working, is it's less time off work, less recovery time doing two together versus doing them individually. And the disadvantage is if you are in a lot of pain and it hurts to bear weight on both sides, then you kind of got a problem. But We've not seen that.
So you feel like that would be a reasonable course of action as to actually replace both knees simultaneously?
I think it's going to become more common, more the norm than it used to be, because I'd seen maybe two people do that in my first 8 or 9 years at St. Clair, and I've seen probably 7 or 8 in the last few months do both knees.
Now, in terms of outpatient rehab, what types of things would send a person to an outpatient rehab facility?
Outpatient rehab is really good for people with pain, back pain, neck pain, joint pain. Therapy can do a lot with lumbar spine and cervical spine, with exercises and myofascial work, with the muscle and tissue and modalities like ultrasound, electrical stimulation. It's also good for people who are deconditioned or weak or have had a sports injury. So there are a lot of reasons to use outpatient rehab.
Now, do you see your inpatients in follow-up as outpatients, or usually it's either one or the other?
I used to see them, and then I kind of got away from seeing the inpatient rehab, but now I've found that there's a lot of the inpatient rehab that benefit continuing to follow up with outpatient rehab, because I can keep up with their rehab course and if any new needs they need or if anything needs to be changed, and just make sure that they're not slipping back and continuing to progress. So I do see probably about 50% of the inpatient and the outpatient clinic.
So maybe you need to change course. Maybe you need to rehabilitate yourself. We're going to give you a chance to do that because we're going to take a break, and we're going to actually rehab ourselves and then come back for our second fractional portion.
Are we going to look for Ted?
Ted.
I think we need to spend some extra time looking for Ted.
I think you're just trying to make me feel bad, and I'm not going to allow it. No, we're going to take the break now, and we'll be back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 8.5th or so annual Fall Spectacular here
on
Health
what?
Matters.
Who cares which one it is, right? It's the best one.
Well, people want to keep track.
It's
it's
best one this
especially
year.
Especially as the years pass.
Well, I've been here 11.5 years, so we have missed some in there.
Yeah. There were a few that just
Well, the show's been on for over 10.
Well, in our format.
In our format, 10 years.
10 years. So it couldn't have been more than 10, but it was probably, as you mentioned, Melanie, there was a few out with us. From St. Clair Regional Medical Center Rehab Services, the medical director, we call her Ted. You know her as Dr. Melanie Ledford. Hi, Melanie.
Hey, Tony, and good job. Yes, Tony does. Rick doesn't.
Our sponsor for the second time, Shoes with Ted. Shoes with... Do not look at me, okay? Just don't look at me. Shoes with Tread, beware, don't you dare make a slip, take a dip, or a trip. You can thump a bump upon your hip. That's right. Hip fractures come from slips, dips, and trips. We'll talk
Did
more about that.
Did you tell me that was a Halloween song?
Yes. You remember that?
I don't
So
remember
beware,
that.
Don't you dare make a slip, take a dip, or a trip. You can thump a bump upon
You're
your
gonna
hip.
You're going to sing. Very I just good. Assume you call me Ted.
She asked. This is one we always sang in elementary school.
It.
And so I've just kind of co-opted it for our Shoes with Tread commercial. Shoes with Tread wants to remind you of the Age and Aging article in 2009. 100 older women, ages 60 years and over, at a day hospital. They asked them to balance using a scientific, they call it the Berg Balance Scale, under two conditions, one with their shoes on and one with their shoes off. And they found their balance scores were significantly higher with the shoes on for 10 out of 14 of the categories in this Berg Balance Scale. The point is, having that extra stability of the shoes makes a difference in falling. So there are a lot of reasons to wear shoes. One, it protects your feet from those unfortunate stub toes from articles that might be on the floor and so forth. And I will tell you, we had to get a sewing needle out of a man's foot at the clinic a few weeks ago because he was going around barefoot. So they do protect your feet, but they also stabilize your balance. Shoes with Tread, a very good idea, and avoiding those trips, dips, and slips that bump your hips. Is that okay?
I guess.
All right. That's our sponsor. Now, a little bit about falls then. This is an oldie but a goodie. This is actually 2009 as well, March of 2009. The CDC issued an article on and some statistics on human falls and pets. 87,000 American humans wind up in the emergency rooms with injuries from falls related to domestic pets. Dog and cat-related falls account for 1% of all the injuries treated in emergency departments back in the mid-2000s, according to the CDC. Now, they look at this, and first of all, dogs were the culprits in nearly 90% of the falls. I think just because dogs are bigger. The other thing is, let's face it, cats really don't want to have anything to do with you.
For the most part.
Yeah, you may turn and trip over the cat who was unaware that you were about to turn. But the dogs will actually come down on your feet.
There are exceptions.
Yeah, and they will actually get in a fight around your knees.
Yep.
So I think there's no doubt about it. Dogs are worse. And I think if you have more than one dog, that's a real problem. Injury rates higher with dogs, about 13 times higher among children up to age 14, and 10 times higher among adults over age 65. Females twice as likely as males to be injured in a pet-related fall. Now, that might be because of lower bone mass, but I'm not sure. I think the women do more with the pets. I think
they take care of them.
They take care of them. That's what I think.
Just like with children, they do more of the work and take care of the pets. Is that right?
I think so.
What do you think of that, Ted?
Well, in my house, that's absolutely true. My wife feeds the dogs, and she also would be the one who's most likely to fall because the dogs sort of swarm around her feet. In your case, Rick, same thing. Melanie, in your household, who feeds the pet?
Actually, it's unusual. My husband feeds the pets more.
He does.
Than I do. But that's probably because he's home more than I am.
Fair enough. I mean, Melanie's out taking care of patients, and I don't know if he does anything productive or not, but at the very least, he'll feed the pets while you're gone. Which
he does at least one thing productive.
He's a good guy. By the way, we're not here to condemn Melanie's husband. I'm sure he's a very nice man.
Is his name Ted?
No, Ted, in my house.
Let's just stay focused here because we're starting to wander.
I called him Ted once, but no, I'm just kidding.
Most common injuries, fractures, 30%, bruises and abrasions, 26%. Individuals over 75 have the highest rates of fracture, and there is the problem. Older people love pets. After the kids leave, a pet can be a real godsend to an older person. However, you have to be careful because they do increase the risk of falling. According to the CDC, prevention strategies should focus on increasing public awareness of pets and pet items as fall hazards. That's the other thing. The dog leaves some kind of a toy, and next thing you know, you're on the floor beside the toy. The other thing, and this is a health matters, we stress this. This is what we think is the key to older people and pets. The American Veterinary Medical Association recommends obedience training for dogs. If you or someone you love is over age 65 and has a dog, we strongly recommend obedience training. It is very difficult for a senior citizen to manage a pet, and these obedience training will help the dogs be calmer and help train away some of those behaviors that can get out of hand with a senior citizen and a pet.
Did you obedience train your dogs?
You know, I'm kind of disappointed with our dogs. Yeah, they at least don't jump up on me. But, you know, I mean, I think like Melanie, I spend a lot of time away from home, and it doesn't take very well. You work on them, and then you leave for a while, and when you come back, it's very
hard. Are you saying that Francis spoils your dogs?
No. I mean, Francis doesn't spend a lot of time at home either. We both have jobs, and so we're home when we can be. But the dogs do spend a lot of time by themselves. I think as we get older, we're going to have to really think about our pet strategy. That's what I think. Next up, research into how we maintain our balance could help prevent falls. Falls are the number one cause for death and injury among people ages 65 or older. Number one. According to the CDC, more than 2 million older people went to an ER in 2010 because of a fall. The body has three main systems to help you stay balanced. Do you want to guess what those three main systems are, Rick?
No.
I didn't think so. The visual system. And I'll tell you in a moment, the other two systems, the proprioceptive system, that is where...
I would have got that one.
Yeah, that's your nervous system telling you where your feet are, what position your legs are in. You can walk about in the dark. How do you do that? Well, you get feedback from your feet and legs, and so you know where to place them next. And then there is the vestibular system. That is, people call that their inner ear, the balance center in the body, in the brain. As people age, that vestibular system becomes less sensitive and people rely more on eyesight. I finally had to make a rule with my mother-in-law. She would pull her blouse over her head or something. She would block her vision while she was standing up and she would fall. She had several falls in the bathroom and I finally said, look, before you take your blouse off, you have to be in a seated position because she could not stand up and remove those visual cues. Likewise, for all of us, as we get older, the idea of getting up and walking about in the dark is a bad idea.
I agree.
So they, what I liked about this review, they mentioned there is a man named Dr. Dingwell. Do you like that? He is Jonathan Dingwell at the University of Texas at Austin. He has research planned, not reported out. He's going to track the relationship between variability in steps and risk of falling. That is, if you take short steps followed by wide steps, maybe you would fall. You know what he's going to do? He's going to trip people while they're walking on a treadmill.
That sounds mean.
That sounds dangerous.
Well, they'll be wearing a full body harness, so they'll be okay. But his research will be tripping people. And I'm thinking, why couldn't I do that research? Would that not be so much fun to have a person walking on a treadmill and then you get to trip them?
Yeah, I can't imagine research via the Three Stooges.
I know, but if I could get a government grant to trip people, I'd be a very happy guy.
This sounds like a man thing, yeah. Excited about being able to trip people, yeah.
No, but the problem is you wouldn't be able to trip the people you want to trip.
Well, I'd just get them. I'd enroll in
your
study.
Because I wouldn't enroll in your study.
Well, I may do some spontaneous research sometime after the show. You never know. Just watch your back.
Let me just say it. I won't get on a treadmill.
Okay. Fair enough. Researchers at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia recorded 227 falls from 130 individuals in nursing homes, in long care facilities, over about 3 years. Tripping only caused 1 out of 5. Now, the majority of people, older people who fall, say they tripped. Actually, in their video camera recordings, only 1 out of 5 falls was a result of tripping. The biggest reason for falling among these older people, Rick, 41% of all falls was due to incorrect weight shifting, like leaning over too far, and also problems when they get up and sit down. Once again, referencing my mother-in-law, she had a lot of problems standing up. She would wobble on standing. Many times she would sort of collapse into a chair. She would get in position and then just kind of heave herself into the chair. And so those weight transfers are a big problem. Melanie, do you see that in the hospital, the transfers, the leaning over as being a problem?
Yes. And that is another advantage of getting therapy. The physical therapist, when they are walking patients, they pay a lot of attention to heel strike and toe off and all the parts of gait and whether they are weight shifting appropriately or veering one way or the other or leaning one way or the other. And we see a lot of that with patients. And a lot of stroke patients don't pay attention to one side. They have what's called neglect and they'll run into that side and not even realize it. But yeah, we see a lot of that. It's a big problem with patients who are debilitated.
Again, in the nursing home study, 75% of patients reported using a walker or a wheelchair to get around. 20% were using one when they fell. So that's, again, a very common problem with older people leaving the walker, leaving the cane aside. Although trips were not the leading cause of falls, that 25% of all trips occurred on the legs of chairs and tables. So one thing is, if you've got a chair or table with a leg all the way out at the edge or a leg that flares out and it's in a pathway, that's going to be a common cause of tripping. You've got to be aware of that, but be also aware that the leading cause of people falling down, of older people falling down, is these weight shifts.
And therapy does offer that, too, home safety evaluations.
Right.
They'll evaluate your house and make recommendations.
As a matter of fact, these researchers mentioned that, and this is something I know I'm guilty of, when I look at balance, I ask a person to walk in the office, and I watch them walk and see how they weave from side to side. But probably a better test, according to these researchers, is actually asking someone to get up from a chair and sit down in a chair and watch them when they're making these weight transfers. Next up, drug-related falls in older people. This was from Therapeutic Advances in Drug Safety back in April. Again, just a reminder to our radio fans, a third of all people over age 65 fall at least once a year. And of those fallers, about half of them will fall at least twice. Fall accidents in people in the nursing homes and people over age 80 is over 50% every year. And again, so the frequency of falls, the severity of falls as you get older, are why falls are a leading cause of death and disability for elderly people. 2 million emergency room visits in 2010. Women more likely to be injured, about 1.6 to 1 ratio. Over 500,000 hospitalizations, 20,000 deaths, $28 billion in medical care. Majority of these, again, are fractures. About a third of all ER visits, hospitalization is required. And so there are several risk factors. And Melanie, I'll just run down these. And if you got comments on them, just stop me. First of all, age, obviously. As a person gets older, more likely to fall. Female gender. Right. History of previous falls.
Yes.
Fear of falling.
Oh, that's a big one. We have a lot of people, if they've fallen in the past or they're in for a fracture because of a fall, a lot of anxiety from falling. So what do you do for anxiety? You might want to give a benzodiazepine, but then that's a fall risk too. So
if you give them the anxiety medicines, you actually increase the risk of the thing they're anxious about.
Yes, that's the way it works.
Not a good situation. Low level of activity, obviously. Arthritis. Now, we will talk about that more. I've got some questions about arthritis as a risk factor for falls. Vision impairment. Certainly, we have documented here on Health Matters, we've talked about research about higher risk of falls when a person switches to bifocals because they're not able to visualize the ground as well. Also, people with cataract surgery can have an impact on risk of falls as well. Depression, and it turns out depression, no matter how it's treated, they have a psychomotor part of depression that makes a person more likely to fall. Obvious things like stroke, cardiovascular disease, chronic dizziness, and certain types of medications. We'll talk about that in a moment as well. So these risk factors add up, and you can see if someone you love who is dizzy, mentions a fear of falling, that person may not active physically as they used to be, has some vision problems, you will wind up with a higher risk of falling. You need to be very careful for that person.
And you mentioned previous falls being a risk of another fall. You're a higher risk. And I don't know if all hospitals are doing this, but my mother was recently in a hospital in Lexington, and if you have had a fall in the last 3 months, you automatically get a bed alarm. So if you try to get out of bed, your bed alarm goes off automatically if you've had a fall in the last 3 months. And of course, if you're like your mother, you try to hide it. You don't want to admit that you've had a fall.
Yeah, so maybe you just you try to cover it up. Well, no, I didn't have a fall. And those bed alarms, by the way, these things are very annoying.
They're very annoying. I hear them in my sleep. Yes, they're annoying.
Because you have to make a bed alarm different from any other alarm in the hospital.
Right.
So at least at St. Clair, they still play She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain.
Yes.
Can you imagine that? It's like some Christmas caroling gone nuts. Every time a person gets out of bed, it starts playing She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain.
That would...
saved many a person, though, from a fall.
I can see senior citizen Rick sitting there with a Phillips screwdriver disabling the bed alarm as a workaround. I can see this, Rick.
I will not take be your less doctor. Than a screwdriver.
I can see Rick figuring out how to disconnect it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Actually, no, I'd rather figure out how to cheat it.
So you want to change the tune?
Yeah, I'll do something. I'll figure out something.
You want to figure out how to keep it from going off when you move. You would figure it out.
Actually, I'd like to have it go off while I'm sitting there.
And what Rick wants to see, it would play theme music while he walks, which would make him more attractive. Rather than she'll be coming around the mountain. Let's face it, that does
not really
rock anyone's world when you're walking up.
No.
To, okay.
No, trust me, when you're in the hospital, the last thing you have is dignity.
But back on target here, we were talking about falls and drugs and falls. And this shouldn't be of any surprise to anybody. Sleeping pills, your risk of having a fall about 1.5 times. Again, a raised risk of fall from sleeping pills. Do not assume that sleeping pills are innocuous. Yes, all those people who wake up in the morning smiling, I don't know where they come from. I don't know where they live. Most people with sleeping pills, they barely wake up at all in the morning. There is that period where you are still drugged somewhat,
yes.
And they do raise your risk of falling.
Yes.
Antipsychotics, these are medicines that often we use for aggressive behavior in people who are more confused, about a 60% increased risk of fall. Antidepressant medicines, and that includes the new antidepressant medicines as well. All of those carry about a 60 to 70% increased risk of falling. And as you mentioned, benzodiazepines, these are the Valiums, the Libriums, the sleeping medicines that are often used. Anything that ends in a PAM, basically the azepams, all of those carry an increased risk of around 60%. And then a surprising one to me, arthritis medicines. This is like Aleve and ibuprofen, about a 20% increased risk as well. Now, you would think, again, if arthritis is a risk factor for falls and you treat the arthritis, you would expect at least neutrality or perhaps an improvement in falls because the arthritis medicines make you more mobile. In fact, that doesn't happen. Maybe they make you mobile enough to fall down. Maybe they don't have any effect on mobility. They just treat pain. Not certain, but certainly there is no evidence that arthritis medicines will lower your risk of falling. So that's a little bit about drugs and falling. Next up, and this is one I mentioned, arthritis and falls in the older person. This was back in May in the journal Age and Aging, pointing out 27 million adults have clinical osteoarthritis, wear and tear arthritis, and 12.1% of Americans over age 60 have both symptoms and x-ray changes of arthritis. So for this particular research, they asked, well, what do we know about arthritis and falls? They looked at people with hip pain in a large general practice group. Women with hip pain, 3 times more likely to report falls in the past 12 months, whereas there was no increased likelihood in falls in men with hip pain compared with control subjects. Now, the older women who had evidence of osteoarthritis on x-rays had a 30 to 40% reduction in their risk of falling, having 2 or more falls in the past 12 months. Those who reported themselves they had arthritis, an increase. So if you think you've got arthritis, this would be Rick, who's always complaining about stuff, you have a higher risk of falls. If you have arthritis on an x-ray, then you actually have a lower risk of falls.
In other words, I'm a liar.
Well, yeah, but that's beside the point. The point is, we would think people with x-ray damage to their joints, you would expect that joint would not work as well. You would suspect a joint not working as well would make you at higher risk for falling, and that's in all of our textbooks, that arthritis leads to a higher risk of falling. It turns out, complaining of pain, maybe because you take medicines for the pain, I don't know, it does increase your risk, but actually, If your joint looks bad on an x-ray, your risk of falling is lower.
But wouldn't it be because if that joint is actually showing problems on x-ray, the odds are I'm being tender with it or I'm aware of it, and so I'm somewhat behaving, if you will?
Yeah.
As to where if I just think there's a problem but I can't really feel that there's a problem, then I think I'm a 30-year-old when I'm a 60-year-old?
Yeah. I mean, separate research, and Melanie, chime in here, separate research has shown that knee replacement increases your risk of falling. Now, again, it's not a reason not to get knee replacement. What happens is you become mobile. That's the whole goal of knee replacement, is to get you up and moving. So if you compare people before their knee replacement and afterwards, they do have a higher risk. But one of the reasons, Rick, might very well be what you've mentioned. Perhaps if you make the joint well enough to walk, you walk enough to fall. Whereas with a bad joint on x-ray before the knee replacement, you're not even walking enough that you will even take that chance.
All right. It's more that you're just more active, not the knee replacement per se, but just that you're doing more and trying more. And feel confident.
Well,
doing
you
more.
Tell me, Melanie. I mean,
I think it's that you're feeling confident that you can do more, and you feel better, and you feel like you're using it more, and so that's why your risk increases.
Just be happy he called you, Melanie.
I am. It made my night. I'm happy now.
And now I'm going to call you out, radio fans. It's time for you to go get something nice to drink. Don't get an arthritis medicine. Who knows? You might fall.
Don't fall.
Yeah, don't fall. Slip into those comfortable shoes and take a break. We'll be back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips, not Ted.
And I am Ted Weaver.
Like I said, we were kind of cutting up during the break.
Yes, we were.
And it was so funny because you were just lucky you didn't say shoes with tread.
Shoes with tread, that's right.
And I
at
can't
least
look,
you said Ted.
And I can't look at either of you all without laughing.
Okay, let's see if we can get through this. First of all, joining us for our third and final fractional portion for the third and final time from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, the Medical Director of Rehab Services, Dr. Melanie Ledford. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Tony.
And our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. That's right. Reminding you.
They're good for you, no matter how funny
they are. So beware. Don't you dare make a slip, take a dip, or a trip. You can thump a bump upon your hip. Broken hips come from slips, dips, and trips, and avoiding those is the principal purpose of Shoes with Tread.
So see now, how can you get through that entire tongue-twisting
sentence
and can't get through Shoes with Tread?
I wasn't looking at you. I mean, let's face it. That's just the whole thing degrades once you're in there. Now, let me point out, this show will be our last show before Halloween. So I took a moment to think about, in a Halloween sort of way, about monsters and creatures and so forth. And ask yourself, what creatures could you legitimately outrun if you don't fall down? Because, after all, that is how so many people have met their demise, was trying to run away from a very slow-moving creature and slipping over a tree trunk, getting their foot wedged in the railroad tracks, all those things.
Do you remember The Thing?
Yes.
I remember.
Or The Blob.
The Blob.
I remember The Blob.
Now, The Blob. Now, surely you could get away
from
The Blob.
You could outrun The Blob. That's
right. Well, they couldn't in the movie, though.
No, but they were always sitting down and they fell asleep. So the key to outrunning The Blob, you're absolutely right. The Blob, I am estimating, moves at less than 1 mile per hour. I don't think you could get a blob over a mile in an hour. In that case, then, human beings, they can walk around 4 miles per hour. Top speed, sprinting speed for humans, about 27 miles per hour. You should have no problem with a blob if you don't fall asleep. I mean, even falling down, you could outcrawl a blob, right?
I hope.
Right. All right. Now, what about, I think, a mummy. Mummy, I think, is going to be the slowest monster that you might encounter this Halloween. I'm going 1 mile per hour on a mummy. Now, I actually saw, and I'm being dead serious, I saw the Journal of Rehab Medicine in April. They looked at Parkinson's patients who have gait abnormalities. 2 miles per hour predicted 70% of patients with Parkinson's disease who could walk in the community. That is, if you or someone you love has Parkinson's disease, they ought to be able to walk 2 miles per hour or greater if they're actually out walking in the community. So I believe a senior citizen with Parkinson's disease could still outwalk a mummy. I'm just saying, in terms of land speed of frightening monsters. Now, zombies are tough.
Zombies.
Yeah. No, well, it just depends. You got to classify the zombies. Is it old school or new school?
There apparently are 5 types of zombies. I don't know all the types of zombies, but I pulled this off the internet. The original Dawn of the Dead they were about 0.75 miles per hour, slower than mummies.
Right.
They were 1.5 miles per hour in Night of the Living Dead and still slower than a community-dwelling adult senior citizen with Parkinson's disease. So you get your walker out, you can outwalk a Night of the Living Dead zombie. Obviously, they get faster, 28-day zombies, about 25 miles per hour. A sprinter could outrun a 28-day zombie. My zombie expert told me that. She assured me that would happen. And then you've seen the trailers for World War Z.
I've seen the movie.
You've seen the movie.
And they move fast.
I think they could run down most wild animals. I think there's no chance. Let's face it. No matter what shoes you're wearing, you could not outrun a World War Z zombie.
No.
Okay.
No, they were scary fast.
Now, a witch, we had some debate on this.
Does she have a broom or not?
Well, but the thing is, if you're in the woods, if you have air cover and you actually are walking, out walking a witch, we think that you could keep up with and you could probably outrun a witch. Most witches are older. They're not going to have great stamina. We think with a good pair of shoes, you could outwalk.
Was it a Nimbus 2000?
I know, but if you're in the woods, they don't fly well in the woods. They got to go high. You ever seen a witch fly through trees? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I agree.
Now, a werewolf.
You're in trouble.
Wolves can reach top speeds of 45 miles per hour. You cannot outrun a wolf.
I just got to outrun the person with me.
And vampires, let me just say, it doesn't matter what kind of vampire you're looking at. Thank you for that. That's an old joke. I'm not even responding to that. No matter what kind of vampire you're looking at, you have no chance of outrunning a vampire.
Well, yeah, they turn into a bat and flap around. And
either that or they just do, you know, the Twilight vampires, they would do something where they just move extremely fast. And I don't know how it worked. So, but if you look at that, starting at Frankenstein at 1.7 miles per hour and going through zombies, mummies, and the blob, if you just maintain your balance, you can outwalk the majority of monsters on this list.
And remember to wear your shoes
with tread.
Tread.
With good
right.
shoes, you can outwalk most of these monsters except for the fast zombies, vampires, and werewolves. And we're sorry. Shoes are not going to help you.
That's just bad luck.
There's nothing you can do. We're sorry for you. But for most monsters, simply a good pair of shoes and a brisk pace, and you will be perfectly fine. This reassuring word brought to you from Health Matters.
And that's
shoes
what you have for Halloween.
I had a busy week.
You know, the thing is there's something nostalgic with this show and the fact that when Halloween comes, it starts that Hallow Thanksmas season.
Yeah.
And we are about to start that season. There's Christmas stuff at Walmart.
If you look at the shopping season, basically starting before Halloween, there are continuous displays. We always buy too much. We buy costumes. We buy way too much candy and food that we shouldn't eat anyway. And we give presents that nobody wants. And we spend all of our money. And then we go to returns. That's about mid-January. So starting really after Columbus Day and going through mid-January is a Hallow Thanksmas season where everybody goes off their diets and everybody breaks their budget. So, yes, we're starting that season. The best we got, shoes with tread. I'm sorry it was a busy week. We'll try to do better for the Thanksgiving portion of the Hallow Thanksmas season.
But you've given good advice for
Thank
trick
you.
Or treat of yeah. what monsters to
yeah,
avoid.
Yeah, just put your shoes on, maintain an even pace, watch where you go, don't
Stay
fall down.
Stay calm.
That's right.
Don't overreact.
Don't panic. That's the problem. They all panic. That's where the problem comes. Now, here's one that I thought was pretty interesting. This was October 9th, 2013, the AMA Journal of Surgery online. This is about surgery and falls. And not in a way that you would expect, Rick. One-third of all U.S. operations are performed on people over age 65.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have older people undergo a lot more surgery. It turns out they ask about a history of falls before you had surgery and looked at your risk of having some complication of surgery. Now, they mention we tend to think in terms of diseases. Like if Melanie or I were supposed to consult on a person who was about to have surgery, we would ask if they have heart disease and lung disease and kidney disease, and we would address those factors to get them through the operating room. They said, wrong, wrong. That's the wrong way to approach it. Look at people who are frail, who have geriatric syndromes, which means that their capacity is reduced. These are pressure ulcers, incontinence, falls, functional decline, delirium, things like that. That's more important to their risk than a laundry list of diseases. So this study, they had everybody over age 65 who was having either colon surgery or cardiac surgery, and they asked them before they had surgery, they said, have you had a fall in the 6 months prior to operation? Now, again, if it was Melanie's mother, she may not tell them the truth because she's afraid they'll put a bed alarm on. But if they did tell the truth, then they followed them after surgery. They had 200 people. Average age was 74 years old. About a third of them admitted to having falls before surgery. It turns out that they had more postoperative complications in the fallers. The fallers were about twice as likely to require discharge to a nursing home or a rehab facility, and their 30-day readmission rate was higher, both following colon and cardiac surgeries in people who had falls.
Interesting.
Yes. So falls, it turns out, is a marker for a general frailty, not only a risk factor for the next fall, but a general frailty. So if you or someone you love has had falls and is undergoing surgery, I want you to realize that person has a higher risk.
So does that mean for Christmas you get them a padded jumpsuit?
I think, well, what you try to do, obviously, is to try to avoid the fall in the first place.
So you need to get shoes with tread. You need to make sure there's, I mean, obviously, if their vision plays a big role in it, make sure their glasses are up to snuff or...
Yeah. Now, realize, they use falls as a marker. So it may not be. So if somebody like me, who has just a mean spirit to them, comes up and trips an older person, I haven't changed their operative risk.
He admitted to it.
Well, I mean,
no, that's the other guy, Ted.
Yeah, no, honestly, I mean, you know, mom walks by, you can't help yourself. I think we've all been in that position one time or another. But seriously,
who are you and what have you done with my friend?
But seriously, if you take falls as a marker of frailty, it does make a difference in complications. I think the key thing, and Melanie, we can talk about this, balanced type exercises may lower your risk of falling.
Oh, definitely. We have talked about that on previous shows.
Yeah.
Balance, especially as you get older. Working on balance exercises is very important.
It's things like Tai Chi, excellent idea.
Yeah.
The other thing I've seen, and I've tried this actually, is to, and Rick laughs at me, but I've got one of those electric toothbrushes.
Oh.
And it beeps when you're supposed to change. And what I do is I stand on one foot, and every time it beeps, I change the foot. And that gives me some balance practice while I'm brushing my teeth. Don't do it every night, but I try to do it frequently.
But when it beeps, shouldn't you stop? Isn't that the idea, is you should stop brushing your teeth at that point?
No, I change to a different part of the mouth.
Wow.
So you go right, lower, left, lower.
Because mine's like 2 minutes.
I know, and you won't do it. We've talked about this.
No, I won't. 2 minutes is a long time.
So Rick basically decides that he knows more than his toothbrush about how to brush his teeth. The toothbrush is right there on the scene of the teeth and is giving him advice about when to change, and he's ignoring it from the command and control center.
He doesn't think it knows, and dentists have made recommendations for these toothbrushes, so I guess that means dentists don't know.
Yeah. And I think, Rick, if you had a chance to test your balance, you would, at that point, it's a test of your endurance, your ability to win.
Trust me. My teeth would probably regret the day that I stood on one foot while I was brushing them.
Now, let me say, and this is...
I'd fall.
And here's the thing. I have tried, personally, closing my eyes while I'm on one foot brushing my teeth. And I cannot do it anymore.
Oh,
I am an old
man. I've got to try that in the morning.
Well, see, I even hesitate to say it.
About your habits. I just don't want to know
I even hesitate to say it because here's the thing. I'm worried that somebody's going to call us up and say, well, thanks a lot, Health Matters. I was brushing my
on one foot.
This show needs a disclaimer now.
Well, no. Let me say to our radio fans, I don't recommend it because I can't do it myself. I cannot stand on one foot with my eyes closed.
But you could when you were
40. At some point, I lost that. I'm pretty sure I could stand on one foot with my eyes closed. I didn't test it every year to see when I lost it.
Can you do it without brushing your teeth? Stand on one foot with your eyes closed?
Well, I don't ever test it.
Have you tried that?
Wait a minute. Let's hold on a second.
We'll be right back after this commercial.
Why didn't you say this in the second fractional portion?
I know, we could have done it during the break, but I don't know. But certainly if you're driving, do not try to stand on one foot with your eyes closed in the car. That's the sort of thing we'll read about in the newspaper.
Well, it'll get us knocked off the air.
That's right. And if you're at home, please make sure you have safeguards. Again, don't try this at home without some protection. But you got to ask yourself, you know, well, how are you going to work on your balance? But back to the original point, surgery, apparently frailty in general, is a risk factor for surgery. The way to defeat frailty is regular exercise, particularly balance emphasizing exercise to avoid these falls. It also will equip your body to go through the surgery better. No doubt about that.
That's good advice. Work on your balance. Do weight-bearing exercise for your bones. In good shape.
Are you going to get you some gymnastics gear at the house there so you can...
Well, one thing I did try, which was kind of interesting. Again, following our sponsor, I tried with my shoes on and with my shoes off. I tried standing on one foot. I have better balance with my shoes on. Especially if I wear some shoes that support my ankle, because my ankle tends to wobble, particularly when I close my eyes. This is just the way I am.
But if I think you're going to be at home brushing up in your gymnastics, I just get this instant vision of you doing that interpretive dance stuff.
It's not pretty, is it?
No, it's not at all. I mean, I can see the little twirling thing going around. It's just bad.
Yeah, I know. It's at any rate. Well, we'll post a video on the Health Matters website. I'm sure it'll be up by tomorrow.
Whenever tomorrow is.
One final thing.
You got time.
Okay, one final thing.
You got three or four minutes.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was, Melanie, we talked about this. I find this fascinating. Walmart and Lowe's.
Oh, yes. We did talk about
as
it.
Of October 8th, this was in Modern Healthcare. Walmart and Lowe's have announced that they will offer their employees coverage for hip and knee implant procedures with no cost sharing if they get the procedures in 4 previously selected hospital systems. Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Kaiser Permanente, Orange County, Irvine, the Mercy Hospital in Springfield, Missouri, and Virginia Mason Medical Center in Seattle. If you have your surgery done there, your knee or your hip implants done there, they will pay full costs, including consult costs, and they will also pay travel, lodging, and living expenses for yourself and a caregiver, because they have determined that these hospitals have better outcomes, lower complication rates than other hospitals in the country, and they know the prices these hospitals will charge.
According and they to, actually think they can save money by doing
that? I disagree. I don't think they will.
According to Randy Moon, Lowe's Vice President of International Human Resources, Benefits and Information Systems, he said this is especially important for our employees who live in areas underserved by high-quality health care providers, which is code word for rural. I mean, you know, where else would you be underserved by high-quality health?
Ted?
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit irritating. Now, let me explain to you the fallacy of this and why this upsets me. First of all, I practice in a rural area, but this is not about being insulting. I want you to realize what they're doing. They're saying that these hospitals have better outcomes than hospitals in other parts of the country, and assuming that the patient populations and resources are equal. That is, because the patients currently going to one of these hospitals have good outcomes. Well, we can take people from other parts of the country and ship them there and create the same outcomes. Now, the problem...
You think that's flawed?
I do. I think these hospitals are self-selected. They have people that are local, or they have people with the financial resources to do this and the inclination to do so. If you take senior citizens and you ship them across time zones and you take them away from their family and from their support groups, you're going to get, in my mind, an entirely different outcome than you anticipate. But here it is. You know, they have put their money and their employees' money betting on the fact that they can move people across the country and duplicate the outcomes that happen spontaneously with these hospitals.
Well, I mean, one thing, and it's something that's happening in our IT organization at UK, is we're trying to let the numbers and the metrics stand for themselves. You know, we're trying to look at things from a statistical standpoint and take that and let them bear out. And so I think in this case, just give it some time and the numbers are going to bear out. I mean, you're going to see either you or Lowe's are going to be wrong.
Yeah, one of us will be. Melanie, what's the advantages to getting rehab at home?
Well, the advantage is people are more comfortable in their home surroundings. And if you're talking about elderly, and some get a little confused by going to a different environment, and that can increase their risk falling after surgery. They have family support in their home environment, that which they would not have if they were shipped across the country for their surgery. I mean, I can think of several reasons that it'd be more beneficial in home.
Absolutely. We think there's several reasons why we've got to get off the air as rapidly as we can.
Okay, Ted.
Melanie, thanks for appearing on the show. I'd like to give our thanks to Melanie Ledford, who's the medical director of St. Clair Regional Rehab Services. And Rick, it's your time to shine.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Asa Hosoda and to Eric Bilberry, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Just look for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember this important safety information.
Health Matters may cause you to fall asleep without warning during daily activities, including talking, eating, and driving, which may result in accidents. Tell your doctor if you feel new or increased sleepiness while listening to Health Matters.
When listening to Health Matters, hallucinations may occur, and you may sometimes feel dizzy, nauseated, faint, or sweaty when you sit up or stand quickly.
Before listening to Health Matters, talk to your doctor if you feel sleepy during the day. Tell your doctor if you drink alcohol or take other medications that make you drowsy, as these can increase the chance that Health Matters will make you fall asleep when you should be awake.
Some patients listening to Health Matters have reported problems such as gambling, compulsive eating, compulsive buying, and increased sex drive. If you or your family members notice that you are developing unusual urges during the show, talk to your doctor.
These are not all the possible side effects of Health Matters. Tell your doctor if you have any side effect that bothers you. Experts have pointed out that 20% of the people listening to Health Matters should not be listening to the radio and should actually be under the care of a physician.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.